The Bitchery of History is brought to you by Audible.com.
You can start your free trial today and download a free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/bitchery. That's B-I-T-C-H-E-R-Y.
And welcome to week 10 of
The Bitchery of History.
My name is Max.
I'm Allison.
And today I'm going to be talking to you about the Empress Theodora.
Ooh, I took a cue from you. Last week I'm going to be talking about Lilith, a mythical woman.
Yes.
Or so they say.
I love Lilith and I'm so excited that you're doing her.
I know. It's going to be great.
So, the Empress Theodora, I was actually told, or we were given the suggestion in our first week, way back February 1st, by Alex Elliott for us to do the Empress Theodora.
Thanks, Alex.
So, shout out to Alex Elliott. You see, y'all, you make suggestions and we follow them.
It might just take us a few weeks.
So, the Empress Theodora, today is a big day because today is the anniversary of the day she ascended to the throne.
Mm-hmm.
April 4th. 527, she became the Empress of Byzantium. That's 1,489 years ago today.
Wow.
So we get to mash up today in history and Our Lady of the Week.
So good.
You ready for this?
I'm so ready.
Okay. So she was born in the 6th century, probably in the year 500. We're not really sure. She was born to the bear keeper of Constantinople's hippodrome. And so since she was a commoner, they didn't, like, keep very good records.
I just want to go back to the bear keeper comment. That's, like, the only thing I can think about right now.
Byzantium, where Theodora lived, took place in Rome. So she became, when she becomes the Empress of Byzantium, she's becoming the Empress of Rome.
Holy cow.
Yeah, the Byzantine Empire is the one that came in once Rome fell apart.
Right.
The Byzantine came up and they set up and they moved the capital from Rome to Constantinople. She's born to the guy who's in charge of
Keeping the bears
so that, you know, they're fit and ready to eat the Christians or whatever. I'm not sure.
The gladiators. They ate.
Yeah, gladiators. And the poor sports who got thrown in there with no armor or whatever. Like in Game of Thrones. Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Yes, okay. Obviously.
When she gets thrown in with the bear.
Oh my gosh. You're right, I guess that'd be a job. Oh, I'm the bear keeper of Westeros.
Could be a great threat, too. You want to mess with me? Do you know I literally have bears in my control?
My father owns bears. Right. Not my father owns a gun. My father owns bears. Okay, keep going.
So, the majority of what we know about Theodora, because she is from so long ago, comes from three works that all have the same author, who was not necessarily Theodora's greatest fan.
Ooh.
So his name is Procopius. He's also from the 6th century. He lived during the same time, but his works were not published till the 7th century, around like a half century after Theodora passed away.
Okay.
And the reason we know that he's not altogether favorable of her is because throughout the books, he calls her Theodora from the brothel. He tells stories of geese pecking grain from her lower torso. She dances naked, save for a single ribbon at the hippodrome at one point. He has her saying that she wishes she had more than three orifices for pleasure, and she was upset that God had only given her three. And he refers to Justinian on more than one occasion as a headless demon.
I have no words. I have no words right now. I have no words.
Right. So we go into this, like, history of Theodora with a little bit of apprehension, a little bit of a healthy skepticism about the veracity of a lot of these things. And the only things that I'm going to be really pointing out are those things which have independent verifications from other sources that aren't just Procopius. Because Justinian was known as an emperor for codifying the laws, and we have a lot of information. And so a lot of the stuff that we have on Theodora is like independently verified by public records and stuff like that. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Okay, so now to Theodora. At 5, her father dies. It doesn't say how, but I'm assuming a bear. And her mother marries another animal keeper, but is unsuccessful at getting this new animal keeper her husband's old job. And so she dresses up Theodora and her two other sisters as actresses and, like, teaches them the, like, movements that were
known
for acting in theater at that time.
Right.
And she succeeds at getting them jobs at the Hippodrome. And so Theodora, at the age of 5, becomes an actress. Well, she becomes a performer at the Hippodrome,
right,
which included being an actress, a dancer, a mime, an artist, a comedian, and an just all-around entertainer. Unfortunately, at the same time, in Byzantium, the word actress was basically synonymous with sex worker,
right,
and courtesan.
Yes,
which
of course
is where we get the why a lot of people today don't want to use the word actress, because there's still a little bit of that
connotation
to it. It's not the only reason, maybe not the main reason, but there's that like undercurrent that it used to be. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So by 15, she's like the star of the Hippodrome, and she catches the eye of this guy named Hesebolus. And at 18, she becomes his mistress and leaves the Hippodrome. Doesn't last very long. It's not, like, the best pairing. And she leaves after, like, a year or two to become an ascetic in the desert near Alexandria, where she becomes a monophysite. And we're talking about the difference now between monophysitism and polyphysitism. I think that's how it's pronounced.
Right.
It's the argument between whether Jesus Christ was a mortal man and a divine being in one,
right,
or if he was a mortal man inhabited by a divine spirit. So Theodora becomes a monophysite, which is the group of people who believe that Jesus was a mortal man,
mm-hmm,
with divine power inhabiting him. And they were serious about this. The division between them was almost as bad as the division between Sunni and Shia at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were executing monophysites left and right.
Wow.
So just, like, keep that in the back of your mind as we continue with Theodora's. Because at the time, the state was Orthodox Christian. So at 21, she leaves the desert and she goes to Rome. And she meets, through some set of circumstances, she catches the eye of the current emperor, Justin. Another thing you have to remember, Justin and his nephew Justinian is the ruler and the ruler to be.
Okay.
It's a little confusing. So Theodora catches the eye of Justin.
Mm-hmm.
And she becomes one of his mistresses. She also catches the eye of Justinian, and they start being lovers. And Justin, when he finds out, because Justinian is his nephew, and he, like, brought him in to be his successor,
mm-hmm,
he goes, you know what? I like you. I want to make sure you're happy and you're continuing your studies. You can have Theodora. And not only does he let Justinian and Theodora be together, he has the laws changed with Justinian's help. They overturn the law that forbids actresses from marrying, and they pass a law elevating Theodora's social status. And once those two laws are passed, Justinian and Theodora marry.
See, this is why I want so many movies about these things, because I don't really like romantic comedies so much, like current romantic,
mm-hmm,
comedies. A lot of times they're not usually very funny, I think.
A lot of times they're very sexist.
Sometimes it's like, I guess they're not really romantic comedies, but I feel like romantic movies these days are always like, oh, we're in love, but I have cancer, now I'm dead.
Oh, right.
And it's like, I don't want that. But a scene where people are discussing, like, listen, we can't get married until we change this law, so we're going to sit down and we're going to change this law because I love you that much.
Exactly.
That's kind of what I want. Change the laws for me.
I changed the law for you, Allison. We are
you can only
impasse.
Do so much. You can only do so much. Okay. Continue.
And this is one of those places where we have an independent record of that law being changed as well.
Wow.
So it is plausible that this particular fact is legit. I wrote that in my book. It is legit.
Nice.
So they marry. We're not sure of the date. But what we are sure of is that on April 4th, 527, when Justinian ascends to the throne, Theodora becomes the Empress of Byzantium. Yet again, we have found a woman who started as a prostitute and grew to be one of the most influential leaders of her time.
And of, like, all Western culture.
Exactly. Like, these are old, old civilizations and women dealing with circumstances that we couldn't even imagine.
Like, oh, I'm so sorry, my mom just died of plague.
Right, my dad got mauled by a bear. Maybe, I don't know.
Oh,
don't think
God.
That is back.
Oh my goodness.
So here's a sampling of her achievements and power.
Okay.
She worked to ban brothel keepers from Constantinople. She attempted to pass laws making it impossible for pimps to collect money from sex workers. She set up safe houses, i.e. convents, throughout the city for ex-prostitutes who wanted to make their lives better. She worked to gain marriage and dowry rights for women. She passed anti-rape legislation. She consulted for Justinian. Justinian asked her to consult on laws that would end public corruption. She expanded women's rights in divorce. She expanded women's property ownership. She forbade exposure of unwanted infants. And she forbade the killing of women who were caught committing adultery. One of the most successful achievements that she had was the putting down of the Nikko revolts in 532. And these were fights, from what I can understand, over sports teams. They were fights they were called the Greens and the Blues. They were rival gladiators or fighters or something to do with something that happened in the Hippodrome, because the fights happened, or they started in the Hippodrome. And they were upset that Justinian wasn't letting them have the games that they wanted or do everything that they wanted. And so they all got together, and the Hippodrome, which was right next to the palace, they took it over, and they started this huge mob, and they marched on the palace and laid siege to the palace for a week.
The Greens and the Blues together?
The Greens and the Blues together marched on the palace. They put their differences aside and marched on the palace and laid siege while Theodora and Justinian were inside of it. So by the third or fourth day, Justinian starts getting super worried. And there's a story that says that he was actually considering fleeing. And Theodora stops him by saying, "Those who have worn the crown should never survive its loss. Never will I see the day when I am not saluted as empress." Doesn't that just give you chills?
I'm so in love with this. This is so good.
And so they created this plan where they found this really popular eunuch, and they gave him this bag of gold, and they said, "We want you to march into that stadium." And these people are having a crazy party. They're getting ready to crown a new ruler from the Green side. And what they do is the guy takes this big bag of gold. He marches right up to the leader of the Blues. He says, "Don't you remember 2 years ago when the Greens royally screwed you over?" And then he started handing out gold to people. The Blues almost immediately turn on the Greens and they leave. Justinian's army comes in and kills every single one of the remaining rioters. In the end, 30,000 rioters die. Nearly half the city is left in ruin.
Oh my god!
And thousands of others are wounded.
This is just an episode of Game of Thrones that only follows Daenerys Targaryen. Oh, you think I'm so cool because my dad was a bear keeper? P.S. I also have dragons.
Right,
that's all I can see. This is so good.
It's an amazing episode. And to think that, so that's really, I didn't even know where it was going. I'm all over the place right now.
Okay.
I have to say that I got 8 hours of sleep for the first time in 2 weeks last night. And I feel like I could jump a building right
now. So jealous.
So I'm ready to talk about Theodora's influence on religion, which is just it's just a little part. Because Justinian was an Orthodox Christian, and she remained a vocal monophysite throughout her entire reign as empress. Mm. And there are some historians who think that they did that as a calculated move in order to control the power of both
religions.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
keeping
they didn't stop.
The Greens
stop,
and the Blues happy.
Exactly. Because they didn't stop killing monophysites, or they didn't stop sentencing them to death. They didn't stop banishing them, but they would banish them, and then Theodora would go, "Hey, by the way, you're cool. Just leave." There's a story of a man Theodora allowed to hide in the women's quarters after he was excommunicated by the Orthodox Church, and he was there for almost 12 years after she died because of the strength of her influence.
Oh my gosh.
She kept people off the cross. She sent money to people who had been banished from Constantinople. She took people in who'd been banished from other parts of the world because of their religion. I mean, she was a defender of the faith. She was a defender of the city. She was
defender of the women.
Exactly. Defender of everything that you could want to be defended. That's not usually defended.
Protector of the small.
Right. So...
That is... the title of a series of books, so I claim no copyright on
Protector
that.
Of the Small?
Yeah, Protector of the Small. Great okay. books by Tamora Pierce. Check them out.
A woman. There you go. So Empress Theodora passed away on June 28th, 548, probably of cancer. They're not 100% sure, but they have records of her sickness, so they think that's what it might be. And Justinian is really crushed by it. And we know this because there are multiple examples of him paying tribute to her. It's said that when he curses people, he uses her name after she passes away. It's said that...
Almost set her ghost on you.
When people...
Oh my god, I love it!
It's said that it's when so people would come to him to try and get him to do things for him, one of the easiest ways to convince him of something was to invoke Theodora and to explain why she would have gone for it. And there's an episode in 559, so this is, what, 11 years after she passes away, where Justinian is entering the city on this triumphal procession, and he stops the entire thing when they pass her tomb within the city walls. He stops the procession, he goes in, and he prays and lights candles to her, to share the moment with her before going back out, getting back on the triumphal procession, and just keeping on going.
See, I don't want a boyfriend. I want that.
Exactly. I want devotion.
I will take nothing less.
I want devotion after I'm dead. Like, remarry. That's fine. I'm not going to keep you from remarrying, but don't forget me. So that's it. That's the story of Theodora. She did a lot more. You know, she was an amazing woman. Mm. But this is a half-hour podcast.
So, as my brother would say at the end of his book reports, shout out to Jamie Powell if you're listening. If you want to know more, read the book.
Exactly.
That's great. I am definitely in love. Adding that to my list of dream roles. And now I am going to talk about Lilith, who, like yes. you last week, mm-hmm. spoke about sort of a mythological mm-hmm. woman. Mm-hmm. Lilith is also maybe based on a real person. Most likely not. Lilith, a lot of people are starting to know mm-hmm. about or know a little bit mm-hmm. more of.
She's definitely come back in lately.
She has, but I'm going to kind of cover her story from the earliest mentions of her, mm-hmm. and then it'll go back and explain some of the things that you think that you know about her. Mm-hmm. So it might seem a little out of order, but it's not. So the earliest surviving mention of Lilith is actually in a Sumerian epic called Gilgamesh and the Kulupu Tree.
I know Gilgamesh.
I'm going to just say that with confidence and go with it.
Sure.
So it was written in 2000 BC, and the story is basically, it's a huge epic, but Gilgamesh at one point goes to a tree to do honor to the goddess Inanna, but several demons are in the tree, including Lilith, who flees the tree and she goes out into the desert. Huh. So Lilith is seen, you know, as a demon, as a seductress. She's a patron of abortion. Her breasts are said to be filled with poison rather than milk.
Oh, wow.
She is a sexually frustrated woman who preys on young men to explain why they can't keep it in their pants. Mm. I don't know. That's just my theory. She may have really been created also to explain the high rates of infant mortality because, you know,
sure.
kids don't survive so much in
not
the olden days.
In 2000 BC.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So it may have been an attempt, you know, like
to
other creation stories, exactly,
yep.
to rationalize, you know, what exactly is going on. The thing about, you know, preying on young men as well could be trying to scientifically explain.
It's the boogeyman.
It's the boogeyman a little bit, but it's like the puberty boogeyman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So she's only mentioned actually once in the Bible, in Isaiah 34, in which Yahweh has a sword, he's going for vengeance against the Edomites, and he's going to ruin Edom. And then there's one verse, one sentence, basically, that says, "There too the Lilith shall repose and find herself a resting place."
Huh. Okay.
That's it. That's the only mention of her in the Bible as it is
uh-huh.
codified right now.
Right.
Some versions of that passage actually say hag or night bird.
Okay.
So Lilith, maybe she's kind of an owl demon as
yeah.
well. So it's interesting that she keeps being banished to the desert, or
mm-hmm.
you find her in the desert or in places of ruin, because that's representing also barrenness.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps if women aren't able to conceive, blame
mm-hmm.
Lilith.
Depending on when she's being called a hag, they could also be calling her a witch.
It would be, you would probably know more about this than me.
I have a story to say. Once you're...
Yeah.
I have some issue because I know about Lilith from Jewish mythology, and there's some definite Jewish mythology about her.
Yeah, in the Talmud. Yes, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Okay, great. So the Talmud actually conveys more information about her as a demon lover, actually, with long hair and wings, preying on men while they slept, of course.
Yeah.
Which is why the Talmud says that you should not sleep alone at night. Especially men. You shouldn't sleep alone at night because Lilith might come to you.
Interesting.
And make you do things that you shouldn't be doing.
You see what I'm getting from most of the warnings around Lilith?
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like...
Don't have sex.
It sounds like the kind of thing that a society that doesn't trust women would make up to scare their young men.
Yes.
And to keep their women subservient.
Yes. Absolutely. Because it's not until the 7th century CE.
Mm-hmm.
So what has that been?
2,700 years later.
Yeah, 2,700 years later.
I'd like to point out that we are closer to Theodora than Theodora is to that first story in Gilgamesh.
Wow. Whew. So Lilith's been around for a while.
Yeah.
So it's not until, you know, 7th century that we get her origin story, which is what most people know. And that actually comes from an anonymous text called the Alphabet of Ben Sira.
Uh-huh.
And there in chapter 5, that's where it states that Lilith was Adam's first wife who left Eden after being treated as his inferior.
Mm-hmm.
So that story is the one that a lot of people know, in which God created Adam out of the dust, and then he created Lilith out of the dust, and they were both living in Eden. And then when time came to be getting on, Lilith refused to lie beneath Adam and said, we are equal. Why should I lie beneath you? I'm not your subservient. And Adam got very frustrated at this. So Lilith spoke the unutterable, unmentionable name of God, he who must not be named, and then grew wings and flew out of Eden and actually flew off to the desert again.
Yep.
Which is where we always find her.
The actual language, I guess where the story comes from is because the first words of Genesis,
right?
It says, in the beginning God created man. Or what's the actual...
That's not the very...
It's not the very first, but in the first, like, when it talks about creating man, it says, in the beginning God created man.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the way it's worded in the original text, in the original Hebrew in the Torah, the word man doesn't refer to the gender man, it refers to...
Humanity.
Mm. And so because the line then goes on to clarify that, and then he created Eve.
Right.
There's the belief that God created everything needed for mankind, a man and a woman, at the beginning. And then he created Eve afterwards when that original creation didn't work out.
Right. Because how on earth could a society survive if everyone was treated equally? Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? But yes, that's exactly what it is. And in my research, of course, it was saying there are so many scholars, especially Jewish scholars, now and throughout centuries and centuries past that would study all of the different writings in the Torah and the Alphabet of Ben Sira and the Talmud and all of this, and try and sort of piece together stories, because they weren't really okay with something being mentioned once and kind of thrown away.
Well, that's kind of like, that's the backbone of Judaism. There's a there's a very famous, not famous, but there's a well-known phrase in Judaism that says, there is more to be learned in the white fire than in the black fire. And what that means is, in the Torah, the white would refer to the page that it's written on.
Right.
And the black is the phrase itself.
Right.
It's basically a really fancy way to say,
read between the lines.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's more written between the lines than... And the Talmud and the Tanakh are basically just books where they took famous writings and they went, let's talk about them. That's literally what the Talmud
is. And that's exactly where the story of Lilith comes from and sort of gets... It's more modern day interpretation because they are saying, this little demon that was mentioned once in Isaiah, and then we have this mysterious first woman, because there are, even now and even in the Christian Bible, there's two creation stories, Genesis 1 and Genesis 2.
Yep.
And if you read both of them, you're kind of like, what's going on here?
Right.
Guys, do we have two worlds? I don't know. Maybe the Matrix is real. But you're absolutely right in what you were saying earlier as well. Lilith basically represents a woman that society can't control. She's very independent, very also sexually active, mm-hmm. and not in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
She has a sexual appetite. Sure. She's a sexual creature, like all of humans.
Like all of humans.
So, there's
sex
that.
Sex is natural, people.
Hashtag banging Lainey. Here we go. So, for a long, long time, she was seen as this demon, as a seductress, don't sleep alone at night, don't be having sex ever, make your women subservient to you, they must be beneath you, literally and figuratively. However, then with the rise of modern day feminism, they began to see her as a role model because she does represent this independent woman,
mm-hmm.
who, not that she's rejecting men or refusing even to sleep with men, but refusing to be subservient to them,
yeah.
and just asking to be treated as equal. So there's a magazine about Jewish women and Jewish women's issues and things that they might find interesting, and that is actually called Lilith.
Mm-hmm.
And then even when I was driving the other day, I passed a makeup school and a makeup studio that was called Lilith, no H on the end.
Huh. Okay.
But I still thought to myself, hey.
Same root, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And very
Same
similar. Root. Like, let's take something that women are supposed to really know really well,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, we're expected to wear makeup when
mm-hmm.
we get older, and we're
absolutely.
Expected to always look good, and let's take that, and let's teach that to women so that they can make a living off of it.
Yeah.
So,
and
props
knowing,
to you,
and knowing
Lilith
Los Angeles,
Makeup School
absolutely.
And Makeup Studio.
And knowing Los Angeles, it's probably Lilith in another language.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
I'd like to make a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking, dear audience, for Lilith in popular culture, my favorite play of all time is called The Love Song of J. Robert Oppenheimer, and it's by Carson Kreitzer. And it follows J. Robert Oppenheimer as he works on the Manhattan Project, which is when they created the atomic bomb during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And Lilith plays a huge role as one of the prime antagonists. And it's honestly one of the best parts written
it's,
for a woman.
It's so good.
In recent history.
Also add that
amazing.
To my dream role list. Because
oh, well,
it's
here's
so
the
good.
Thing, though. I will produce The Love Song of J. Robert Oppenheimer soon. It's on recording.
So
y'all
it's
hold me
happen.
To it.
But that's actually my only, I mean, obviously we don't have any quotes from Lilith,
sure.
but there is a beautiful quote in that play that I think I've said before on the podcast,
mm-hmm.
but I'll say it again because it cannot be repeated enough. It does no good placing a woman on a pedestal. It's just another excuse not to look her in the eye, which is so beautiful.
And that goes for bad women too. It does not go for putting
yes.
a woman who you're not happy with in a place where you can't look her in the eye.
Yes.
We interrupt the podcast at this moment to
okay.
bring you a brief message from our sponsors.
Remember to check out audibletrial.com/bitchery and download your free audiobook today. I would recommend so many. I love audiobooks.
Oh, there's so many books on Audible.
But to start, I would suggest Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. It is a fantastic book, especially if you are a young woman or a woman of any age. There's just so much inspiration and so many great quotes that
and she
you
was
just
the
fall in love.
She was the chief operating officer at Facebook, which is one of the reasons why we think she should be listened to.
So you can check that book out for yourself at audibletrial.com/bitchery.
Yep.
Praise.
And I think we've switched around. So let's talk
Praise.
About our term to define now, and then we'll talk about today in history.
Perfect.
Afterwards.
Okay.
We'll just switch
around.
We'll play it. We'll mix it up.
Yeah. Play by ear today.
I think it's all about intention. So
yes.
I feel like most women would be perfectly okay with someone opening the door for them, as long as the intention behind it is, I'm a nice human being. You're another human being. I'm already holding the door, or I'm here before you.
Right.
Let me open the door for you.
Yeah, I
and
hold
not,
the door open for
I'm
people.
Holding the door open for you because you're a woman.
Right.
Or I'm not going to hit you because you're a woman. I'm not going to
yes.
hit you because you're a person. And hitting
and you
people
shouldn't
is not
hit
nice.
Anyone. You shouldn't
exactly.
hit anyone.
You shouldn't hit anyone.
There's a great moment.
Unless you're smacking them with your words.
Right. Well, there's a great moment in Deadpool, which I know you haven't seen yet. But
to.
Audience, you should go.
Someone
I would,
buy me a ticket,
I would
please.
Go again with you. But it's a great moment where Deadpool, who is a male, the protagonist, the
sure.
hero,
mm-hmm.
is trying to find out where the villain is. So he's interrogating all of these random cronies. And he starts out fighting these two people, and then it gets revealed that they're women, and of course they're badass. Like, I think they have swords, if I remember the scene correctly. It's part of this whole montage. And then he's like, wait, you're a woman? Is it sexist to hit you? Is it sexist to not hit you? Like, I just don't know. And it's such a great moment.
Right.
It's hilarious. It's honest. And I think he does go back to hitting them because he needs to get his information.
Mm-hmm.
So he needs, it's supported by the plot.
Sure.
And it's not nice to hit anyone. And I'm not condoning that anyone go out and beat someone up for information, you know.
Right.
Follow the law, follow procedure.
If somehow you go through the same process Deadpool went through and you become a superhero, then we can talk about you hitting people.
Right. That's what it is. And it's, I mean, even that video that you posted on the page the other day where, like, there's no kill shots of women in movies where they get shot in the head.
Oh, yeah.
I never even thought of that,
yeah.
But it's so interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I think while we're on the subject of sexism, I need to say that the word reverse sexism, or the phrase reverse sexism, is not a thing.
That's not real.
There is sexism, and there's not sexism.
Sexism, there's a lot of things that I've been wanting to talk about with sexism,
mm-hmm.
which is why I'm glad that we're
finally...
This might
be like a recurring term.
Well, absolutely, and I'm glad that we're talking about it today. Here's an example of sexism that I personally had towards a man, and I will totally admit it. And it's not reverse sexism, it's just sexism,
right.
Because I was making a judgment based on gender.
Right.
Part of my multiple jobs that I do to make money is one is I hand out samples in grocery stores. And of course, when kids come up to your table, you don't know if they have allergies or if their parents say it's okay or whatever.
Or if they're religious and they can't eat what you're serving.
Well, it's kosher, so it's probably fine.
Oh, okay.
But,
sure.
Yes, I mean,
yeah.
You can't just hand a four-year-old, like, here, eat this thing.
Right.
You don't know.
Right.
So this young girl came up to my table. I think she was maybe 6 or 7, and she wanted to try a sample. And I said to her, did your mom say it's okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, that was my thought. Who does the grocery shopping? The mom. Who are
sure.
you with today? Probably your
yeah.
mom. And she just looked at me and she goes, well, it's my dad, but he said it's okay. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, that's fine. And
yeah.
then I texted you right away.
You did,
and I said,
yeah.
we have to talk about
we
this.
Have to, yeah.
Because that is sexism.
That's institutionalized,
mm-hmm.
unconscious
sexism on my
sure.
part, and that I will readily
exactly.
admit to. There's a lot of sexism as well with Father's Day cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I love my dad. My dad is probably the person I turn to
yeah.
for advice most often. He's like my favorite person in the world. Love him to pieces. And he does laundry. He cooks dinner. He's so nice. He'll talk to me about
mm-hmm.
like feelings and
yeah.
emotion
mm-hmm.
and whatever. He's
yeah.
always very open and very accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no Father's Day card really that I've ever found that expresses that. But there's plenty that say, oh, well, Dad just plays golf. Dad
right.
doesn't know how to cook.
Take the day
Dad
off.
Just wants beer and
Here's
a new table saw.
You can have the remote control for the
yeah,
day.
It's like,
right.
what is that?
Right.
And then Mother's Day is like, thank you for turning me into the human I am. Thanks for being so amazing.
And they're all very pastel-y.
Yeah, and it's like...
Maybe that's something we should work on.
I have always wanted that.
Okay. Because I mean,
I will market that.
Because I mean, I could... My dad is great, like, in a crisis. Like, if there's something
yeah.
bad going on, like, that's who I want there.
On your team?
Yeah. Oh, every time I've ever gotten into a car accident, he's my first call.
Yeah.
So even the one time when I was supposed to call the police, I called him first, and then I called the police.
Okay.
But I think if I had a card which was, like, thanks for...
Literally everything.
Thanks for bailing me out of
yeah.
that car accident.
Of course. Thing. Not to say that... mothers don't also do any work, or not that I don't
oh,
love
sure.
my mom
sure.
and that she isn't also an amazing person and does tons of things for me,
sure.
but I can get her a card like
sure.
that any Mother's
but
Day
it's a
that
good
I
example.
Want.
It's a good example of how sexism affects men as well.
Right.
Because
right.
when we make cards that constantly say, hey, take the day off, go golfing. Hey, go, here's the remote control for the day. Hey, here's
yeah.
this. It reinforces a stereotype. It reinforces a gender role,
right.
which is sexist.
I saw a post the other day that said a woman sitting alone in a park is a mom
mm-hmm.
or a nanny or a babysitter. A man sitting alone in a park is a predator, which is
interesting. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And of
it's
course,
interesting.
I want to be clear, like, we're talking about all this, of course, just like every week, just to raise the point, to raise awareness
right.
about it. And I also think that it's important for us to mention that neither of us believe that these things are overt, intentioned.
No, they're never intentioned.
Actions.
I mean, I wasn't intentioned when I said, is it okay with your mom?
Of course,
that was
yeah.
That just came out
right.
of my mouth. And then I went, oh my God.
Exactly. And I think it's just a way for us to
everyone's a little
stir
bit
discussion.
Exactly. Sometimes.
Exactly. I mean, we're human. It's just the
of
way
course.
We are creatures designed by evolution to pick out patterns.
Mm.
And that is, sexism is an offshoot of that. Racism is an offshoot of
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But again, why can't that be the dad?
Sure.
There are
oh, no,
plenty
absolutely.
Of stay-at-home dads, and they actually struggle a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we could talk. We should make that a term to define in another week, the stay-at-home dad. And the,
okay.
not only the gender roles that
mm.
that messes with and the issues in society it causes,
right.
but also the difficulties that a lot of stay-at-home dads experience because
yeah.
the world is not set up for a dad to stay at home with a child.
Right. I mean, even as far as, like, there are some men's restrooms in public places that don't have changing tables.
Exactly.
Like, do you not think that a man can carry in a baby? And
right. Single dads are a thing.
Yeah.
Single dads have always been a thing.
And tying all of this in, I had a thought a few months ago that I called and shared with you, and I left you a long voicemail. Do you want
oh,
to
yeah,
play
let me
this
get it.
Voicemail?
Yeah,
Max, I need you to write something down for me. I'm just having this philosophical thought that I thought you would enjoy. And I think it kind of ties into the podcast. I was mainly just thinking about how, like, all of life is created to exist together, like symbiosis and everything. Evolution of male and female bodies, like, one, how they fit together, which is also kind of, you know, for banging Lainey. But without the other half, humanity is incomplete. So we have to have equality, and we have to have both of these sexes that have evolved. And we have to have them working together. Otherwise, you only have one half of the whole. Okay, write that down. Okay, love you, bye.
I call Allison all the time at like 2 in the morning, and I leave her voice messages that say, Allison, I need you to write something down for me.
So I told them to write that down. So that's the term for the week, and some philosophical thoughts to chew on.
And we'll revisit it.
Absolutely.
Sexism is huge.
Absolutely. So let's go on to today in history.
Yes, ma'am.
So we already sort of covered one, if you want to talk about that.
Yep. So April 4th, 527, Theodora ascended to become Empress of Byzantium.
Also on April 4th in 1984, the Greenham Common Women were evicted. This was a peace camp in England that was keeping watch over missiles that they didn't want being kept there. They were on an airbase that had sort of been taken away from the people. So the last missile was returned to the U.S. in 1991, but the last protesters didn't leave until 2000, actually. They kept being evicted and kept coming back, and they left in 2000 after the airbase was returned to the people, and they had received the right to put up a memorial at the site of the peace camp, sort of commemorating these women who just lived in tents to make
yeah.
sure that the missiles were not being improperly used. Which is fantastic.
Yeah, they kept their vigil. On April 6th, 1947, the first Tony Awards happened in honor of Antoinette Perry.
Ooh, we should cover her sometime.
Mm-hmm.
April 8th, 1141, Empress Matilda was proclaimed Lady of the English by a clergy council in Winchester and supported by the Bishop of Winchester, who was Henry of Blois, we're thinking?
Sure.
We're going to go with it?
Henri de Blois.
There we go.
Who knows?
He, brother of Stephen, who had seized the throne, Stephen had, despite Matilda's claim to it as her father's named successor. So I'm going to cover this Empress Matilda.
It would
sometime.
Be interesting when you're looking her up.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know if you can find the evidence as to if he took the throne because she was the heir and because she was a woman and he didn't believe that she should have been throned, or if it was just a power play.
Absolutely. I'll try and find the whole story.
This is possible.
Try and find the whole story. Thanks again for spending some time with us.
I think this is our longest one yet. I
might
love
be.
It.
Sexism
you
will get me on a rant.
Exactly. If you'd like to keep in contact with us, please do. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/umpboh.
We are also on patreon.com/UrsulaMajor. So for just a few dollars a day, you can help support us. That's patreon.com/UrsulaMajor.
Subscribe to our channel on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podomatic. Leave us comments letting us know what you think.
And most of all, the best thing you could do about us every week is tell your friends.
Yes, get more people listening. The Bitchery of History is a production of Ursula Major Productions.
And as always,
bitches get stuff done.